Welcome to the Go Health Podcast. I'm Gillian Strain, Chief Exec of Go Health, an organization with a vision to enable churches and individual Christians to be a healing presence in the world. And on the Go Health Podcast, we have great conversations to inspire us all to connect health and faith for the benefit of all. And on today's episode, we're doing something a little different. Many of us sense that we're living through a time of deep instability, not only in the wider world we put on our news at night, but also in the church and in our institutions. Leaders are carrying an extraordinary weight, and things that once seemed set in stone are now looking fragile. And on top of all this, we know in our churches there we have cultures that need reshaping, got to face up to some safeguarding failures, and that there are decisions ahead in the institutions we care about that will require courage. And so at this time especially, we need leaders to look after themselves, to stay healthy and grounded and spiritually alive. At Go Health, when I'm out and about in the world doing training, I spend a great deal of my time in conversation with these leaders. And you know, again, I'm hearing again and again the same stories of stress, burnout and fragility. But I'm also hearing stories of vision, of longing for change and a deep passion still to make a difference through the times we're living in. So that's why in this episode, I want to explore how leaders can lead well, tell their stories, handle power wisely, and how organizations themselves sometimes need healing. And if we're going to do that, that's where the spiritual life of our leaders really matters. So over recent seasons and episodes of the podcast, I've spoken with lots of different people, with theologians, practitioners, scientists, and thinkers, giving them space to answer my questions. And that's been great. But today I want to get into the conversation myself, if you'll allow me, with someone else, with someone who has great vision and purpose for the difference that good organizations can make in the world. Wendy Ball is a consultant who strengthens the identity and shared vision and partnerships of value-based organizations. Wendy has a background in nonprofit branding, graphic design, and organizational development. Wendy, welcome to the Go Health Podcast. How are you?
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Lovely to be here.
So I've just done your CV, kind of LinkedIn. This is who Wendy Ball is. But Wendy, how do you introduce yourself?
Oh, what a lovely invitation. Thank you. So I guess in a professional context, I work with impact networks and charities or other organizations that have some sort of primary intent to bring good into the world. So I accompany these different groups and organizations to enable them to work better together. And that is not just internally, but also in terms of how they work in partnership with others. So someone once described me as a life coach for organizations. And I kind of see where they're going with that. It's kind of, being a companion to senior leaders and to teams. And together, giving attention. We give attention to the relational context of their organization, as well as the strategic intent of what they're trying to do in the world. So it's lots around culture, around organizational development, around communications internally, as well as outside in the world, and helping to foster a kind of collective clarity, because I think there's something about having that common language and common frameworks that helps us build cohesion and momentum in the work that we're doing.
Yeah, and full disclosure, we've worked together, right?
So this absolutely. Yeah. I think we've been on a journey together for about 3 years or so. And when I'm introducing myself, I would often like to speak to what motivates me in the work. And obviously it's effectiveness. I want those who I'm working alongside to be making a kind of progress towards what they most care about. But there's a deeper conviction and drive for me in this work. And that's, I think so many of us long for some big and beautiful changes in the world. And it is hard to see how they'll come about, but they definitely will only come about if we work together. So that's what I do. I try to accompany organizations and networks so that we can explore what helps us work well together and be well in the work as well.
For people who are listening, I immediately sort of chime with, yes, we've got a vision. Yes, our systems are tough. Yeah, and there's just so many different types of organizations. I'm sure that resonates with for people who are passionate about what they do.
And another aspect, to string to my bow, I also have an artist self. So I would describe all that sort of professional work as my out loud work in the world. And my other work I would talk about as being my quiet work in the world. And some of that is a lot of creative endeavors, including photography. So I take hand portraits to kind of acknowledge interconnection and people's place in the world, our place with each other. And I call that work that we belong, that sort of series of hand portraits. So that's something of some of the ways in which I would introduce myself. But how about you? You've introduced the podcast, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you would typically introduce yourself and the work you do in the world.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's goodness me, it's weird being on my own podcast and somebody asking me a question, but okay.
I'm sure.
This is my moment. So thank you. And it's interesting how we introduce ourselves in different ways in different contexts. So I guess how I'd introduce myself in this work, depending on who I'm talking to. So I'm an Anglican priest within the Church of England, although deeply influenced by a Presbyterian upbringing in the Church of Scotland. And part of that has been sort of theological training, but more importantly, work in the parish in London, in Oxford, in other places, which has really grounded in me the importance of community and being eyes open wide about how you can make real difference in the world is through individuals in their community, in their context, of which they're an expert. So that's part of who I am. I'm also a scientist, so my PhD is in physics. So an early love of trying to understand how the world works. But I guess my approach to science and the way I continue to think about science is, yeah, it's about head knowledge, but where science I think is really exciting, the fuzzy edges of science where there's lots of unknowns, is that science can really help us understand not just how the world works, but how to be in the world. So I enjoy taking that into my world when it comes particularly to health science. I'm a cancer survivor. I've got personal experience of serious ill health, surviving that and thinking that therefore the difference between curing, you know, when the doctor says you're in remission, go well, and what healing means at a deeper level. And my day job, in which I coalesce all of this, is I get to be the chief exec of Go Health, working with a fantastic team. And it's wonderful to have small, agile organization working with our trustees, of course, as well, with a clear vision and purpose. And we've seen growth in terms of who we're working with. And that's sort of yay for us. But I think what that's really talking about is the need in the world right now for healing and wholeness and making a difference. So I get to combine also my personal stuff with my faith and my vocation as a priest to run an organization, but where I've seen it working really well is where we speak clearly to the vulnerability that I have, that our organization has, because there's a great deal of vulnerability in the world, and a degree of honesty around that I think has been really important in helping us grow.
That expansion that you're talking about, sorry, I cut you off there.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Exactly. So let's be honest about what the world's like, what the church is like, what life's like when rubbish comes along and hits you. Let's just be honest about it. You know, if you're a person of faith, Jesus loves you, but doesn't solve all your problems. So in terms of your role, what are you noticing in the world today and in terms of how we need to support leaders?
Yeah, what am I noticing in the world? Now, there's a big question. And what we need from leaders. I think it feels a particularly poignant question in these times. It seems to me that there's a huge amount of strain and harm and conflict even that's being perpetuated by many of our leaders and our systems. I know that not all of that harm and strain is intentional, but it's there as part of our collective life. I kind of see or notice so many mindsets that are not driven towards lifefulness. It feels like there's a lot of us and them. There's sort of, you know, we've got a longstanding, widespread extractive mindset as well towards the natural world, which is, of course, our home, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if we're wanting to see more good in the world, if we're wanting to see more justice and more peace, then we need more leaders who are modeling and enabling something different.
So when you're talking there about us and them, you've mentioned the environment, what other systems or structures are you talking about there?
Well, for me, it's not even just in the systems and structures. Yes, of course, it's in the wars, you know, like that are playing out of just, you know, who has validity and whose resources are we going to use or draw on, or who has a right to life even. In terms of, you know, whether somebody can kind of remove what is sustaining you in your country. But for me, it also goes into the systems within our organizations, you know, just like, are we about like the manage, you know, there's so much speak about the management or the organization when actually all of those things are people. And so why are we not talking about them in terms of people terms? So there's something of that. And I think in systems thinking, that thing of like, we're not going to change these systems using the same thinking that created it. We're not going to change our systems using the same leadership approaches that created them. I think we need leaders who are rooted in kind of regenerative thinking. You know, and I appreciate Margaret Wheatley here. She's written a book called Who Do We Choose to Be? And she uses the term sane leadership, which just chimes so much with me. I just like lands on me like water on a sponge, you know, how much we need sane leaders. And she describes sane leaders as those who have the unshakable belief that people can be generous, creative, and kind. And then they work, these sane leaders work to foster environments in which we're more likely to show up.
Is that regenerative leadership? Is that what you're talking about there?
Well, I think it is regenerative leadership, which of course is drawing on the principles of nature. Like she speaks about it as sane leadership, and that sense of creating islands of sanity, you know, where yes, I think it is where you've got like more potential for flourishing. And I think it's not even about seniority necessarily, you know. I think we need sane leadership across all spheres, like whether it's in our homes or our social circles or our community spaces. You know, I'd advocate that we definitely need more sane leadership in our political institutions at the moment, but probably also within our religious institutions, which is of course your context. I mean, yeah. What for you? Your work is largely within the church and with Christians. What are you noticing about leadership?
Yeah, I felt when you were talking there, Wendy, about systems or people with, you know, within them, that I was really thinking about the stories I hear from people on the ground in our churches, talking about the structures they live within, even to go as far as talking about the trauma caused to church leadership by the institution they're working for. So deep, entrenched problems in some areas with our organization, particularly at this time when there's a lot of anxiety within the church. There's anxiety over decline in numbers, and people get really worked up about this and then operate out of an anxious place in terms of shoring up decline, and then that has a trickle-down effect on others, and then that's interrelated with anxiety around power, around inheritance in terms of buildings, but also systems, a big anxiety around safeguarding and so on.
As you're talking, I'm just feeling that building of the tightness. It doesn't feel regenerative, you know, it doesn't feel, it's got a tightness to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's whatever the opposite of regenerative, that's what it feels like. Mm. And then so I spend a lot of time listening to people's stories, which are not just, gosh, I'm having a bad day, or, you know, it's stories of breakdown, mind, body, and soul breakdown of human beings, beloved creatures of God, who are trapped in this system, which is supposed to be the body of Christ, the church. Hmm. And yet they're so trapped within it. And not just folk on the ground. Often I go to training days and I hear clergy and lay leaders telling me deep stories of burnout, to the point I'm doing mental health intervention sometimes if I'm that worried about what people are saying. And there's no clear roadmap ahead. I guess in terms of human identity, part of our identity is be able to imagine our future. And I think as an institution, we can't imagine the future at the moment because there's such sharp questions over who we're going to become. Though I don't think any of this is easy, but I think that's sort of a sketch of where I am around systems and leaderships and the churches.
And that sense of naming what is. As you're speaking, I'm hearing a kind of a plainness in terms of trying to say, you know, that this is what is. Yeah. And this is our firm ground to be walking on or to be leading from.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I value about you, Wendy, is you're always learning stuff. And every conversation, I've got another book to read. There'll be show notes if anybody wants to follow up on any of this. What's your learning edge right now when it comes to leadership and living in the world as it is?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'm always learning from those I'm working alongside, and I work alongside diverse organizations. So I feel as though I've got a rich petri dish to kind of draw on for what I'm doing. And so actually, one of the things that I'm working on or learning and wrestling with and kind of developing a muscle around is from what I'm learning from you and your team in terms of you guys draw on quite a lot, or you folk often draw on the phrase minimum viable product, you know, your try it and see mindset or approach. And I remember you mentioning that to me in a conversation last year. And just that whole idea of prototyping and just putting stuff into the world to see how it lands, you know, working with when is it useful and valuable, you know, put at that point launching something in its current state, even if you can imagine it could be developed in different ways or fulfill a different potential. Whereas for me, up until that conversation, even though I'd been aware of the concept minimum viable product, I'd never heard it explained in those terms that you and your colleague Graham were speaking to. It. I think he uses it a lot in the work that he does. And I think that sense of, for me, getting comfortable with the imperfection of something so that it can be a gift, but also so that it can then adapt in line with what people actually need and with what people connect with. So I think that's one of the things that I would put into that. How about you? What's on your learning edge at the moment?
Something that you fed to me is around
something like a stroking each other's.
I know, but it's
learning edges.
Exactly. So yeah. How to grow a membership organization. GoHealth is a membership organization as well. So one of my big questions is how to grow it for good reasons. How do we get the message out there about health and well-being and flourishing? So I've been looking at some studies that have been done on that question, how to grow membership in the world that we're living in. And some of the interesting analysis has been helping people to understand membership as a shift from transaction, give me money, I'll give you stuff, into participation. So join us and join in with the vision we're seeing in the world. So that's really exciting, I think, for GoHealth.
Yeah, that more co-creation approach to engaging people and engaging with people.
Exactly.
So if we're joining with in journeys, not speaking to or...
To see the change you want to see in the world. And I think that's really exciting. So a lot on vulnerability as well, I think, and that's... personal development for me, but because I've often seen in the world. So I was doing this thing the other day in Wales. They got a new leadership thing going on there, and I'm one of the coaches. I had introduced myself, and I wasn't prepared. That's not a good thing. But anyway, so I stood up. I said, "Well, I'll just tell a story because these are all ministers." So I stood up and said, "Look, I'm here because I struggled in ministry. I struggled with my well-being in ministry. It pushed me to the edge." Shouldn't be like that, folks. So now I do this other thing. And the feedback was a bit of vulnerability helped us to connect as well. So how do we do vulnerability? And so another part of my learning edge is always around personal well-being. You know, you can't run a well-being charity and not try to look after yourself. So a lot on personal well-being and how we support others to look after themselves for their mission. Because, you know, it's not obvious.
I would love to hear you say a little bit more about that, specifically in terms of personal well-being for leaders in these positions, where, as you say, there's so much to do. The ambitions are high.
Yeah, the ambitions are high, particularly in the church as well. Often the barriers are high around vulnerability as well, because there's this idea you're supposed to always be strong, always be clear, and so on. So sometimes people are surprised that the church people have well-being issues, but those inside the institution know that it can be really tough. But my learning is being in my own journey, am I trying to live out my own vocation, is if I don't look after my mind and my body, other things fall apart. But it's not a head problem. It's not like any of us listening now know you're supposed to eat your fruit and veg, you're supposed to get plenty of sleep. We all know.
Uh-huh.
But the trouble is doing it. So it's not a head problem, it's a heart problem. And so when we work with leaders, and I'm speaking to myself as well as other leaders and so on, we have to know why we're looking after ourselves. It becomes a theological problem for us as well. And how we root self-care is really important. So for many people, the theology of sacrifice, I must sacrifice myself, I must pick up my cross and follow Jesus, has knock-on mind, body and soul, embodied well-being implications. But also it has implications because it's so hard to measure how well you're doing in ministry, in any kind of these vocational jobs. But we can measure how tired we are, right? I must be doing well because I'm exhausted. And that edge of competitive exhaustion that you often see when visionary vocational folk get together, because it's so hard to otherwise measure our impact. So well-being, if we're going to frame it theologically in not sacrifice, but in flourishing, Jesus came to give us life in all abundance. If we're going to root it there, then we need confidence and courage to go against a culture of exhaustion and instead value ourselves as God values us in the work. So it becomes theological if we want to truly align our vocation with how we flourish in the world.
And as you're speaking, I'm chiming with some of the things that you're saying in terms of the context that I work within. Like, obviously, most of my contexts are not theological, and I'm picking up those themes. But I'm also picking up, it seems to me that, and from things you've said before, that it's not always a mainstream view that personal well-being for leaders is something to value and encourage, you know, as an institution or even within local, I suppose, congregations and community groups. Am I reading that right? Am I reading your sense of things right?
And for lots of reasons, I think. So people project stuff onto leaders that's not necessarily correct. We want to appear strong and to have it all together at all times. We often live in systems that don't help us look after our well-being because we're often part of anxious institutions that are worried about. So I remember working in one diocese or being in one diocese where the bishop, this is an Anglican context, but it's absolutely true in other contexts too, was always on Twitter. Seventh night in a row, I've been baptizing and confirming. Hooray for Jesus. I haven't had a holiday forever. And that creates a culture where people were afraid to say, Mr. Senior Leader, Mrs. Bishop, whatever, I'd like a sabbatical, or I need a break, or I'm not coping. And that's why I use the word on purpose, courage, to choose a different way, because how missionally attractive would it be, church leaders who were non-anxious and looking after themselves and creating space for others in the world that we're living in? This is a missional thing. It's not just a let's live longer for Jesus thing.
No, it's interesting hearing you speak that, and you're recounting of that story of the bishop and that kind of that more perform, it's not performative, but it is the sense in which it's not okay to talk about not being well or needing to build in systems that are supporting our well-being more. Like for me, that hearing all that is actually landing quite heavily on me. I'm grateful that actually it feels like in many contexts, like within the most of the charities that I'm working alongside or the networks or movement buildings, over the last 10 to 15 years, I've been seeing a real drive and energy towards a recognition that personal well-being of our leaders and our teams is pivotal for the work. There is still, as you say, many challenges as to how we do that, and many of our systems are not yet enabling that. But there is a de facto agreement that this is pivotal and unquestioning. So I do find it really sobering to hear you speak that within much of a church context, that isn't the culture or the way yet. But I hope it changes and faster than we imagine.
And you're right to be shocked and surprised. We mustn't lose that. And of course, I've got a negative bias. I hear the bad stuff more than the good stuff. So just to acknowledge that, there's good people. But yeah, let's hang on to that shock. It shouldn't be like that. Mm-hmm. And Wendy, from your perspective, you've worked with us at Go Health and other church organizations, but you work with loads of other people too. So let's lean into that a little bit now, your wider experience around leadership and teams. Say something about how we can connect big vision stuff to the actual work of teams in the organization on the ground.
Yeah, there are a lot of starting places, but for me, the place to start is making sure we're clear on what the big vision is. So it's about alignment, especially within values-driven work. And so I would typically start with making, are we clear about what is the purpose of who we are as an organization and our vision, getting really clear and explicit about these, as well as what's the ethos or the values or the principles that we want to underpin how we do the work, how we govern ourselves. The ethos being, you know, like the beating heart. If it isn't there, then, you know, our systems and our funding and our personalities are going to drive, are going to dominate. Whereas if we're letting ethos shape culture and systems, I think we've got a better chance.
Okay. And on the ground, what does that mean on the ground?
I think in terms of, as I say, this getting clear about it, it's one of the things that I talk about is what Simon Sinek is somebody who says, start with why. I think that's a really helpful, you know, starting point, understand the need, understand where you're going. But it's also not just why, but what are we doing? And in my experience, many charities and social impact organizations are great at speaking to kind of broad terms to the vision, but not specifically what are we doing in terms of getting to that vision? Or what are the specific values that we value together and will use to orientate how we resolve conflict? So yes, it's something about those places is where I would start, is making sure we're articulating it clearly, or even at the level of a meeting. What is the purpose of this meeting? And what is the tone we want to hold in this meeting? Like, I think that those things can help us practically be focused, but also be connected. I don't know, where do you start with something that's like around connecting this big vision with the day-to-day? Where do you start?
And so that's been, we talked about Learning Edge, that's my big learning edge over the last 10 years with Go Health or so. And what I've learned, it's about how I handle control.
Control? Wouldn't have been my obvious place to start. What, tell us all.
And trust. Okay. So if I think, and I do, that through Go Health and through our churches and blah, 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 through these things, God can act and make a difference in the world. And so my way of trying to connect big vision to what we're actually doing on the ground is about trust. How can we truly trust that all the big stuff will get delivered through the small stuff we're doing? And for me, because I'm a bit of a control freak for lots of reasons, is how I handle control and learn to trust more in God. So trauma often teaches people to control tightly. And so for some of my healing journey has been healing from trauma. And some of that is about looking at how I handle control and try to control things to be safe. And from my own life, I've learned maybe I'm over-controlling things in order to remain safe. I don't have to do that. And I can step into trust. And that is mapped for me onto some of my leadership around Go Health, going away from trying to tightly control things because I'm afraid or feeling unsafe or worried about it. And that tight control might look like making urgent decisions or trying to dominate or hold power too tightly, and letting go of that control and trusting in God looks more like choosing discernment, tuning in, speaking to others, holding stuff prayerfully. Something I say daily, I think, to myself and sometimes to my team, is this is we're just joining in with God's work for a little bit, and we're doing our best. And it's through God that we trust and do this. So it comes with a theological framing as well that I think really helps.
Yeah, but that in terms of that, as you're saying, that discernment piece, or kind of like how are we joining in with a wider work, what does it actually look like practically for you, or how do you see that or apply that with your team?
Yeah, I think what we've learned is paying close attention to a number of areas. First, how you measure success, and it's not just on numbers. Mm-hmm. So we spend time collecting our stories of what people tell us about the value of our work, feedback, and so on. So we can, and we call that the log of transformation. That we record the stories and write them down, because they help us see the change we're making in the world. I remember doing a course, one of our online courses, and somebody at the end said, "You know what? When I started this course, I'd given up on God. I think I found my faith again." And myself and my colleague were like, "We could retire." You know, this is one person has found God again. Just paying close attention to those stories as well as numbers.
And I'm guessing those stories are also then really feeding into that discernment piece that you were talking about, in terms of, well, then where do we need to go next?
Yeah, they give us the intel, I think, yeah. And spirit-led, whatever language you put around it. Being radically unafraid, and I struggle with this one, being control freak, of negative feedback. Uh-huh. It's just information. So often if we're anxious, it lands wrong for me. It does for me. So being radically unafraid. And then genuinely trying to live out, practice what you preach, not do the competitive tiredness thing, look after ourselves when we're doing this, when we're doing all of it. So that's part of things we do to put into practice what we're doing. And yeah, just being open to God and the whole thing. And it's genuinely helped me sleep better at night and looked after my mental health. We're just joining in with God's work for a little bit.
That's that phrase. I'm chuckling at the radically unafraid of negative feedback. I remember somebody saying, like, can we see all feedback as gift or containing gift?
Yeah.
And then get curious about what is the gift in that feedback, especially if it lands uncomfortably with us or is delivered in ways that feel a bit harsh.
Yeah. So let's move on, Wendy, talk a little bit about leadership.
Yeah. So okay. Like good leadership, qualities of leadership, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a great story I have from Sierra Leone about I was on a learning journey, and a young man was speaking with me about, for him, Robert Mugabe was a good leader because he didn't change his mind. And I remember feeling, I disagreed with him at the time, and I still do. I think good leaders for me are leaders who do change their minds, or who are leading and growing at the same time, and responding to what's emerging and others. But what for you are some of the qualities of good leadership, or what do you think, what are the kinds of leaders that the church needs in these times?
I think grounded leaders.
Oh, yeah.
Leaders that are orientated to God, unafraid of change, and believe in the resurrection, right? So believes that actually death isn't the end, and to model good well-being, not in a pithy way, model an approach to well-being and an approach to leadership that relates directly into that they believe each person is created in the image of God. And not to confuse excellence with invulnerability.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add around what you see as good qualities qualities of robust leadership in these times?
Robust is a good word, isn't it? I think there can be the other side of leadership that tries to take, you know, a friend of ours who was the president of the Guild for a while, Professor Jim McManus, who's head of wellbeing for Wales now. When I went to him really early in my time, talking about leadership, talking about consensus, talking about movement making, talking about being a leader in the world with all these problems, he said, sometimes, Gillian, leaders need to be a consultative despot. Now, I'm not encouraging the word despot, but the word consultative is good. And despot says something, people are able to take decisions. I think we need leaders who are able to make decisions now and not have the whole future mapped out as well. That feels important.
Yeah, and for me, that decision-making thing is not just about can take those decisions, but it also are nuanced and adept at different models of decision-making. I think that within decentralized spaces and participatory organization, there are loads of folk who are bringing tools around what kinds of decision-making do we need when. You know, when do we need a strategic leader to make a call on something? When do we need to be more consultative? Like one of the most helpful models, I think, or simple thing that I use is around a circle, a square, or a triangle, you know, where circle is your obvious consensus and consent model. And then you've got your square, which is sort of like your classic organogram. You know, we work more in a bit more in silos, but we are, you know, consulting across the piece. And then your triangle, you've got somebody who's taking a call on things. And your triangle is always going to be your fastest way of decision making. And you need that in some circumstances, but you also need the others. And to know when and how to move between those different ways of making decision. I also think a key thing for me of a quality of a leader, or is one that was really pivotal for me, was around asking for help. I remember being in a participatory leadership training, and a guy called Toko Müller, he was speaking to us and saying, it's kind to ask for help. And we all, you know, it really landed with us. And yes, of course, people like to contribute. And then he went on and said, and people who can't ask for help can't be trusted.
Well, yeah.
And that landed like an absolute lead balloon for me, because I was not in the, I did not have a strong muscle around asking for help at the time.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, people can't be trusted because they think they can do everything on their own. So they're deluded, because none of us can. Mm. And so it really changed my approach to leadership. In those times. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So like, can we move into more of the detail of organizational stuff as well? Because it, you know, we've done a lot on leaders and vision, but on the day-to-day level, what have you seen that can help with the actual delivery of visions on the ground?
Yeah, I think I come back to what I was saying earlier. I think the starting point for me is being clear about what we're here to do.
Yeah.
As an organization, or within this meeting or in this email, you know, being really clear about, so first step is establishing the purpose of what we're here to do and why we're doing it, and then that ethos that we want to underpin it. And so one of the things I do practically is support organizations to develop what I call a charter. So this would be sort of like a document that underpins strategic planning, which is generally, you know, it has a more time-bound thing over a year or 3 years or whatever your rhythm is. But a charter says, who are we? And what are we here to do? It's kind of like charities have memorandums of understanding, and those kinds of documents, but they're quite technical, not particularly inspiring or particularly practical. They develop for legal reasons, and they're not developed for the life of a organization or organism. And so, yeah, that's my go-to starting point, which is how we came into relationship with Go Health. And yeah.
What I've really learned from you, which isn't natural for me, is to really focus on systems. So even
systems.
Even in meetings, you know, have really, why are we there? How are we going to achieve it? How are we going to follow through? What's our to-dos? What do we pick up later? And then go back to the start the next time you meet and have real accountability. Accountability and systems that are covered with grace. We're not developing systems to be punitive. We're developing systems that need to work for the humans involved in delivering the vision.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Triton Sea stuff rather than the, you know, kind of a system that is almost set in stone. I can just hear some people glazing over with the word systems and your enthusiasm about it. But for me, it is that thing of like the ways we do things, that our habits and our practices for how we do things, and the rhythms as well.
And I, you know, I would have been one of the people that glazed over, Wendy, I think, before I did this, because and that's because I'd be too busy to rush to the next thing. But what I've learned leading Go Health is that we're not rising to the height of our visions in order to deliver stuff. It delivers at the point of our systems.
Uh-huh.
If you're trying to manage a team across different areas and so on, it's the systems that matter if you want to deliver the vision. As long as that system doesn't become punitive, you know, why didn't you do your to-do to follow up? We're all on the same page, but the system, I'm paying more attention than I thought necessary to those systems internally, has borne huge fruit. I think, wow. in some of this. And that's, yeah, that's really important.
But I'm conscious we're talking about these kind of systems organizing things, which is very much my wheelhouse. But you're an ordained priest. I'm curious to know how this is not just management speak from your point of view. Where does the spiritual come in for you?
Yeah, it's okay. Management speak's okay. I think we've got a lot. I'm not going to diss it. We've got a lot we can learn from management speak. But yeah, just as we bring this podcast to a close, thank you for asking that question. I guess for me, it's about orientation and obedience. I guess orientation, what I'm doing in the world through Go Health, I'm orientating it to God. When you're ordained a priest, you're ordained into a structure which is about service, about building up the church, about going out to those who are suffering and so on. And I get to do that. But I, through Go Health, this, I see this as my ministry. But I do it with the correct orientation and obedience. I orientate towards my own flourishing because I believe I'm created wonderfully in God's image and God wants me to flourish. And I do it in obedience to God as my service to what God's called me to be. So it feels deeply aligned as well. And I thank God I get to do this stuff. But you also, you've talked about your work as a calling. What orientates you just briefly in this work that we're up to together?
Yeah, I draw on a powerful quote by Martin Luther King. He says, "Those who love peace must learn to organize as effectively as those who love war." And so that learning to organize peace, learning to organize effectively, and learning to organize for the common good is what I'm committed to helping to support. And I don't think we've got a good term for it in the world. I call it lovefare, you know, in the way that warfare is around organizing around conflict and war. For me, lovefare is this organizing we do for connection, for justice, for peace, helping us organize better for the common good.
Wendy, thank you so much for being on our podcast today, for letting me speak a bit more about our leadership, our work in the world, and I feel our conversation has been about vocation, our vocations in the world, us seeing the world as it is through your work as consultants, through what we get to do in Go Health, and to meeting the needs of the world, I guess, through how we're working together with leaders. And so on. Thank you so much for being in conversation with me today and for sharing your wisdom and your passion.
It's been lovely to be here. Thank you for having me. And it's been, I'm glad that we've been able to give your listeners a bigger opportunity to hear more of some of the things that you think and about and wrestle with in this work.
And I'm sure, listen, I think, I know our producer, she just messaged me to say, you guys could talk forever. And that's right. So maybe we're going to need another podcast episode. I'd love to hear more about Lovefare and your work helping organizations to deliver their purpose in the world. It's what the world needs. So if you're a leader and are curious about this conversation and want to know more, do go on the Go Health website, gohealth.org.uk, to see how we can help you flourish in the world. We've got a leaders mailing list, and there's lots of different ways we can support you through our coaching, our events and our workshops. And we'd love to be in relationship with you and your work in the world in one way or the other. So do go over to our website to find resources for the journey that you're on and different ways we can walk with you together. Thank you again for Wendy's being here. If you want to follow up on any of Wendy's work, of her Lovefare work, there's a mailing list, and you can also check out her link tree. You'll find everything you need in the show notes, as well as some of the books we've mentioned today. And finally, a huge thank you to Rosie Dawson, who produces this podcast, and to Wendy Lloyd for all her work on the podcast and the Go Health community.